moving from a neuroscience of pain to a neuroethics of care. That's the subject for this edition of the Bioethics Channel. Professor James Giordano joins us. He is the director of the Center for Neurotechnology Studies and vice president of academic programs at the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies. He will be in Kansas City April 26, 2011, for a symposium on pain issues. Professor Giordano, as a trained neuroscientist, tell us what we currently understand about the neuroscience of pain.
Well, as we approach the neuroscience of pain over the past 50 years, certainly a number of different neurotechnological approaches have fostered and deepened the understanding and insight to the fact that pain is both a peripheral nervous system event and a central nervous system event. In many ways, what this has helped to do is to reconcile what was formerly referred to as the peripheralist-centralist debate. For a long time, there was a standing debate in the neuroscientific and neurological communities about whether pain was really generated in the periphery and then simply transmitted to the central nervous system, that is the spinal cord in the brain, or whether there were just some primordial and precipitative events that occurred in the peripheral nervous system, but real pain occurs at the level of the spinal cord in the brain. In reality, that's proven to be a moot argument. What we've come to know is that pain is, in fact, transmitted via peripheral neurons that innervate a variety of different structures, the skin, the deep viscera, etc. These are then conjoined in the superficial level of the spinal cord, something an area known as the superficial dorsal horn, the back part of the spinal cord. These tracts then come together, they cross at that level of the spinal cord. There is some processing and amplification that goes on there. And there's also some mitigation of pain. Certainly what we recognize is we don't feel every little pain that we are exposed to. Every little sensation doesn't register as painful. But those pains that do meet a particular physiological threshold are then indeed transmitted into the spinal cord. In some ways, the signal is augmented and modified, and then the signal is passed up the spinal cord through hierarchical levels of the central nervous system where other modifications occur. In this way, we can view pain both as a sensation and as an event of cognitive consciousness, which is why we understand that the formal definition of pain that has been rendered by the International Association for the Study of Pain describes it as a noxious event of the peripheral and central nervous system that engages both a physiological response and a profound psychological response. This speaks very strongly to the fact that although pain is an event of the nervous system, it is manifest as a phenomenological event and experience of consciousness and the inextricability of the physiological activity of the nervous system and the experience of pain make it very, very enigmatic to approach both in research as well as clinically.
What does it mean for us to move from understanding pain as a neurological phenomenon to treating it from the neuroethics of care?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In many ways, the problem of pain bespeaks the proverbial mind-body problem. That is to say, at what point can we distinguish between those physiological events that we can objectify and the subjective experience of the activation of those physiological events within an embodied organism, an embodied being, that is the being in pain? Well, what this then points to is what the philosopher David Chalmers has referred to as the hard problems of neuroscience. How is it that cognition, consciousness, this thing we call mind, more extrapolatively, this thing we call self, originates in, is generated by, occurs in the actual physical substance of the brain? And the problem we are then faced with is having to bridge the proverbial objectivity-subjectivity gap. At this particular point in time, despite our best efforts, we really don't have a set of neuroscientific and neurological techniques or technologies that can resolutely and definitively give us an objective picture of pain. As a consequence, there's a continued reliance on the subjectivity of the individual who is experiencing pain. Pain, by its very nature, is in fact a subjective occurrence. It is an experience. We can activate the neurological tracts that may indeed produce pain, but we don't call that thing pain. We don't experience it as pain unless it contains that noxious content. And this is problematic because any approach to pain then has to appreciate the psychological and phenomenological components of pain as experience, as well as the neurological events and activities of pain as an occurrence within the central and peripheral nervous systems. So what does that really tell us? Well, a number of things arise from this. It certainly points to the enigma of pain, in many ways as it points to the enigmatic nature of the mind-body problem. And it also points to our ability to harness particular techniques and technologies to try to create bridges across that schism between mind and body, objectivity and subjectivity. Now, please, let's not assume for a moment that I'm taking a dualist stance here. I'm not. What we recognize is that the neuroscience of the brain-mind gives rise to its function, which is consciousness, cognition, emotion, etc. We simply don't know how that happens. So there's still something of that, if not quite mystery, at least the horizon of the unknown that confronts us daily in both neuroscience and neuroethics. And certainly this is present in pain care. So when we're looking at the neuroscience of pain, we're confronted with this very same problematic set. That is to say, we can understand the objective activities of various neurological substrates and mechanisms, but we may not necessarily be able to depict objectively what that means for the individual who then experiences these things. So there is a reliance on that subjectivity. That said, this has really thrown down the gauntlet for neuroscientific research, particularly that which is translational neuroscientific research, to begin to approach the problem of pain utilizing all of its technical and technique acumen and know-how. So the point we're at right now is that we now see before us many of the issues of neuroethics, that would be the ethical issues that arise from neuroscientific research and its applications in clinical practice, beginning to really bubble up in the pain field. And they are many. So, for example, one of the fundamental questions here is that what are these technologies really telling us? What do they mean if we rely, for example, on the use of neuroimaging, which is a very, very powerful diagnostic tool? We also have to recognize not only its capabilities, but its limitations. Does a neuroimage completely, fully, and resolutely depict pain? Can it do that? And moreover, is that depiction of pain in one individual wholly applicable to other individuals? Or is it more likely that based on the fact that we recognize that see one brain, so to speak, and that our brains essentially mature, develop, and create their infrastructure by virtue of our individual experiences, so that no two brains are indeed identical, might it not be that the depiction of pain is in many ways dependent on whose brain we're depicting? So that although there may be some relatively crude or gross or general measures to say, well, this brain area seems to be active, and that strongly correlates to the possibility that this individual is experiencing pain, that just provides sort of a thumbnail relational index. It doesn't confirm, yes, this individual is experiencing pain, and moreover, it doesn't give us any information about what the qualitative and phenomenological experience of that pain is. It simply can't tell us what that pain feels like, how severe that pain may be, and what that pain, quote, means to that individual.
You've used the phrase a couple of times in your comments, to cross that bridge. Things being as they are right now, what is required of medical professionals? What is required of those suffering with pain to cross the bridge from the neuroscience of pain to the neuroethics of care?
First and foremost, I think it becomes very, very important for those individuals who are pain clinicians to recognize the enigma of pain. We simply don't have a full complement of tools to be able to objectify the subject of that study. We can't objectify pain. And as a result, that places a particular burden of responsibility on the part of the clinicians to utilize a variety of different tools in a variety of different ways, including the subjective report of the patient and the ascribing of that clinician to the fact that they have different forms. No two pains are identical. So there's a dutiful obligation for individuals who are in the field of pain medicine to accept the fact that pain is by its nature an enigmatic creature. Moreover, it also requires that individuals who are in the field stay exceedingly current with the most contemporary research coming out of not only neuroscience, but also genetics, other areas of physiology, and I would argue very strongly, as well as the humanities. The reason for this is quite simple. The field is changing very, very rapidly, with new discoveries being translated from the bench to the bedside on a relatively quick basis. Older techniques, older technologies, and even older treatments can very quickly become anachronistic and their use become dogmatic unless the clinician really stays current with the most contemporary literature and developments in the field. Now, although this would seem to place the incumbent responsibility on the part of each clinician, and certainly at least in part it does, this also then speaks to the nature of medical education, which in the main tends to underserve our understanding of pain and the teaching of pain to both medical students and medical residents throughout their training. So it requires a very bottom-up re-educational system to then engage a much more deeply and finely grained orientation to the problem of pain and what this means based upon our knowledge of neuroscience. Now, for the patient, what this then requires is that the patient be communicative to the clinician and understand that trying to unravel the mystery of pain really relies on patient subjectivity and patient communicativity as well. So trying to develop a communitarian relationship with the clinician, seeking those clinicians who are well-versed in pain medicine, utilizing specialists, is very, very important. But of course here too, we can't be naive. Pain medicine and patients don't exist in a social vacuum. And so we have to also look for the system that supports not only pain medicine, but medicine in general, to provide those necessary resources that pain patients get the care they need and pain clinicians have access to the available research, can translate that research into diagnoses and practical diagnostic and therapeutic tools, and that this system is supported financially as well as administratively.
If there was one message that you hope to leave with the audience April 26th in Kansas City, what would it be?
The more we know, the more there is to know, and the more we know, the greater our responsibility to approach research in a translational focus towards implementing more accurate diagnosis and treatment of pain. The ethical responsibilities are huge, and they arise from our knowledge.
Professor James Giordano is Director of the Center for Neurotechnology Studies and Vice President of Academic Programs at the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies in Arlington, Virginia. He will be in Kansas City April 26th for a symposium on pain issues. For more information, visit pain.bioethics.org. That's pain.bioethics.org. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.